It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Another day, another broadcast day begins here at the Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. It is the 7th day of May, 2019, and it's a Tuesday, a Trump Panic Tuesday, to be precise. A beautiful day here in Appalachistan, to be sure. Temperatures got into the high 70s, not a lot of clouds. Grass is being mown and weed-eated even as we speak here at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. From time to time, you might even hear the merry tones of the two-cycle engine bleeding through the walls of the fabulous Horn Studios. Ferg's doing the yard. Yeah. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and we'll get right after the events of the day. Well, just as quick as we get the thank yous taken care of, because this program always begins with thanks. Thanks go out to Brock and to James and to Reed and to our buddy Dr. Allen. Thank you. You're all our buddies. Friends. Members of a community who support the community and keep it going. Thank you again to Brock and James and Reed and Allen. And they'd love to have some company on the 7th day of the month if you'd like to become a subscriber. Someday, 400 subscribers at $10 a month, and I'll never mention fundraising again. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Yes, it would, as a matter of fact. If you'd like to be a subscriber, run over to HeadOn.live, click on the Contribute tab, and you'll be off and running. Fundraising goal for the evening is $440. And that's basically $20 short of finishing off last week, plus last night's fundraising goal, plus this evening's fundraising goal. So $440. No, that's $40 short of last week. Sorry, me ciphering bad. But that's where we stand, and it would be nice not to run the fundraising goal way too high, because that becomes a problem. Because there are bills to pay, and hey, I found out something today. You know, as opposed to a lot of people who do this kind of thing, I'm one of the great mass of American uninsured. So a few days ago, I called in my scripts for refill. And I went to pick them up today because I had to take Agnes to the doctor. Went to pick them up today, and they said, no, the doctor refused to refill your blood pressure medication and your stomach medicine. You know, blocks the, what do you call it, GERD. Yeah. I said, what? They said, yeah, you gotta come in and pay up, and he'll rewrite your prescriptions once you come in let us perform a radical cachectomy on your wallet. So, welcome to America, and God knows it's a lot worse for a lot of other people. At least I'm not trying to buy insulin, then I hope I never have to. But so tomorrow, yeah, I get to go to the doctor, sit in a room for about 5 minutes, pony up something like $125 or more, and then go and pay for my prescriptions. Yeah. Because America, we may be making America great again, but we're not making America that great. No, because then we'd just be commies or something like that. But anyway, the fundraising goal is $440. And $125 of that is going to be me getting to go to the goddamn doctor. And so, well, there we go. So that's where we stand. 10 at $44, 44 people at $10. If you want to do it through PayPal, that's awesome. Like I said, the link's right there. You can also jump in and click on the chat room tab, pick out a screen name and a password, and be immediately greeted by the likes of Jimmy from the Great Northwest and Squeaky from California. And you'll also be capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space today to become Man Cave. And there will be, if I understand the message earlier correctly, there will soon be, he's going to fold fold space and fold a refrigerator into the Man Cave, which is critical this time of year. Absolutely. And you'll also be moderated by pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. So those are the preliminaries for getting the program done. And I wanted to start the program with a little bit of audio. Because unless you've seen it today, you have never heard this audio before. Because it was suppressed and was hidden for 4 long years. Do you remember? This just in. We've got a challenge on the table. This is only good to the end of the program. This doesn't count for the overnight. Up to $100, Randy in PA is putting the When Billionaires Choose, You Lose $100 challenge on the table. It's good only to the end of the program, remember. But Randy's going to double the first $100 that comes in. If we don't make $100, it doesn't get doubled. But that would knock out the end of last week and most of yesterday. And that would be huge. Thank you, Randy. Thank you very, very kindly. And my doctor thanks you. So, that. Thank you, Randy. The When Billionaires Choose, You Lose challenge is on the table and on the clock. Now, like I said, unless you've seen this in the last 24 hours or heard this, where this is radio, we'll only be hearing. But the hearing will be plenty because it is shocking. I wish it was more shocking. I wish we'd never heard anything like this before in the history of our republic, but that's not true. This audio was suppressed for 4 long years. Remember Sandra Bland? I remember Sandra Bland. She was on her way to a brand new job and was traveling through Texas when she was pulled over on a failure to signal, rousted out of her car by an out-of-control Texas cop, and then mysteriously got all dead while she was in jail. Well, journalism matters. And in this case, it was journalists from WFAA in, I believe, Dallas, who battled law enforcement and the government of the state of Texas for something that hadn't even been acknowledged to exist. And that was cell phone video that Sandra Bland herself recorded, and which law enforcement in Texas did everything in their power to hide. I'll warn you in advance that knowing what became later of Sandra Bland, this is hard to listen to and even harder to stomach.
get out of the car now.
Why am I being apprehended? You trying to give me a ticket
said,
for your failure?
Get out of the car.
Why am I being apprehended? You just opened my car door. You just opened my car door. So you're going, you're threatening to drag me out of my own car.
Get out of the car.
And then you're going to stun me?
I will light you up. Get out.
That's when he draws, I guess it's a stun gun. It's some sort of weapon. Now remember, she's been pulled over for failure to signal. And this cop is already screaming his head off at her. And all she's doing is the thing that is the right of every American, to question why she's been accosted by law enforcement. And he's already screaming at her. She hadn't done anything to him. She hadn't done anything to, God knows, be deserving of this kind of screaming. No. But he didn't have any problem at all reaching for that stun gun and pointed it right at her head.
You just opened my car door, so you're threatening to drag me out of my own car.
Get out of the car!
And then you're going to stun me?
I will light you up. Get out.
Wow.
Now.
Wow.
Get out of the car.
Really, for a failure to signal. You're doing all of this for a failure to signal.
Get over there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Let's take this to court. Let's do it.
Go ahead.
For a failure to signal. Yep. For a failure to signal.
Get off the phone.
On my school.
Get off the phone.
I'm not on the phone. I have a right to record. This is my property. This is my property. Sir?
Put your phone down right now.
And that's where it ends. And the last thing you see of Sandra Bland alive is the camera on her phone pointing downward with her taking a step, and you see about half of her foot wearing a sandal, and you see her painted toenails. And that's the last we see of Sandra Bland alive. Pretty clear who the aggressor was, isn't it? Pretty clear who was in the wrong, isn't it? The most obvious thing in the world is that she should never have been arrested, which means she would not have died under bizarre and mysterious circumstances in a shithole jail, in a shithole county, in a shithole state, in a shithole country. But she did. And at least I can say it shocks the conscience. And of course, some eager attorney for the state was more than happy to claim that this video, I'm sure, was irrelevant because it didn't have anything to do with her dying in that mysterious shithole jail. But die she did. So that's just a reminder of what equal justice under law looks like in the United States of America. That's equal justice under law in the United States of America, where the President of the United States can flaunt those self-same laws and face no repercussions whatsoever. None. Zero. For anyone who would be interested, because we opened the program yesterday evening talking about Steve Mnuchin's, his decision to, to put himself at grave legal risk, at least theoretically, for Donald Trump because of something that Donald Trump has over him. Oh, well, I thought it might be interesting to look at the background of that, especially in light of the fact that Sandra Bland died for merely questioning why she was being accosted. On the other hand, these lawless thugs, clothed, among other things, in their white privilege, get away with things that we can't even dream of. U.S. Code section 6103 of the tax code says that income tax returns shall be confidential and that nobody should disclose them. On the other hand, there's always an exception. And the exception is that, well, in this case, specifically, the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee can request and shall have the returns disclosed to him without question. Yeah. All Section 6103 says is upon written request. It doesn't say upon written request, including the phrase, "Mother, may I?" No. And by the way, it also points out that anyone who does not do their duty under this statute shall be removed from office. And that upon failing to do their duty, any officer or employee of the United States acting in connection with any revenue law of the United States who, with intent to defeat the application of any provision of this title, fails to perform any of the duties of his office or employment, shall be dismissed from office, that's a shall, or discharged from employment, and upon conviction thereof, shall be fined not more than $10,000. Remember, this is a 1924 statute. $10,000 was a bunch of money. Or imprisoned not more than 5 years or both. As long as the request of Congressman Neal falls within the oversight and tax jurisdiction of the Ways and Means Committee, well, he's entitled to the returns. I wonder if he just said, give me the returns. No, it turns out he wrote a letter to the IRS commissioner, April 3rd. Consistent with its authority, the committee is considering legislative proposals and conducting oversight related to our federal tax laws, including but not limited to the extent to which IRS audits and enforces the extent to which the IRS audits and enforces the federal tax laws against a president. That's a pretty legitimate purpose under the Internal Revenue Manual, because you'll have to remember that originally Trump said, oh yes, I'll turn over my taxes, absolutely, but I'm under audit right now, and it's very complicated, terribly, terribly, horribly complicated. And as soon as the audit's over, well, and that turned into, oh no, never. So he made it sound like an audit, it was the government's fault that he couldn't turn over his taxes. the extent to which the IRS audits and enforces federal tax laws against a president. Under the Internal Revenue Manual, the individual income tax returns of a president are subject to mandatory examination, but this practice is IRS policy and not codified in the federal tax laws. That means we might need to make a law about this, which would be our job over here at the House Ways and Means Committee. It is necessary for the committee to determine the scope of any such examination and whether it includes a review of underlying business activities required to be reported on the individual income tax return. That's what you used to call a slam dunk. And so they requested Julius Geezer's tax returns. They require a statement from the IRS asking whether it was under examination. They want the IRS files, work papers, affidavits for each federal individual income tax return requested. And on the following entities: the Donald J. Trump Revocable Trust, DJT Holdings LLC, DJT Holdings Managing Member LLC, DTTM Operations LLC, DTTM Operations Managing Member Corp, LFB Acquisition Member Corp, LFB Acquisition LLC, and Lamington Farm Club LLC, DBA Trump National Golf Club, Bedminster. And then they want more. What it comes down to, they want rather a lot. But here's the thing. They have an absolute right to every last bit of it. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but the whole reason we have this code section is because of something that's called the Teapot Dome scandal. And you might remember that up until Watergate, the Teapot Dome scandal was the worst instance of Republicans running amok and being criminal in American history. It was one nefarious wad of skullduggery and cheating and lying and grifting and grafting, and then Watergate came along and made it look like child's play. But out of that, we got a law that said the House Ways and Means Committee can look at people's taxes as long as it's commensurate with their oversight duties. Yep. And anybody who violates the law gets fined $10,000 and goes to jail for 5 years. That's the law we got out of the Teapot Dome scandal. On the other hand, out of Watergate, we got an Office of Professional Responsibility or Office of Professional Ethics ruling that says, hey, the President of the United States is above the law. You can't indict a sitting president. Because we got very, very close to indicting Richard Nixon. And even once everybody knew just how scummy Richard Nixon was, it still gave the Republicans a horrible, horrible case of SADS to think of a Republican president being indicted. Yeah. So, that's just a... I thought that was a good comparison and contrast with which to begin the program. Nobody's going to drag Steve Mnuchin out of a car and point a taser at his head and then throw him in some shithole jail after the next day, after which we're going to find out that he had mysteriously died. Nobody's going to do that. Nobody's going to do that with the IRS commissioner either. On the other hand, anywhere in America, it can happen every damn day. Further contrast, Ron in Raleigh writes, subject line, no racism. Yesterday on Sam Cedar's show, they played a clip of Dennis Prager proclaiming that the only racism in America was racism against white men. Where the hell do people like Prager and Jesse Lee find the nerve to say shit like this? Really, Ron? You don't know? Because I do. They find it every month. down at the bottom of a, well, it used to be a sheet of paper. Some people, down at the bottom of a sheet of paper where it says, balance forward. And as long as the numbers there are black, well, that's where they find the nerve to say it. Because it pays. It's good for business. Sure. You know, I mentioned yesterday that there was going to be no further mention of the royal baby. But I find myself needing to violate that statement today. And sorry, Rusty. Rusty wrote in yesterday and said, thank you for that. Well, I'm still not really talking about the royal baby. I'm talking about how we talk about the royal baby. You know, the child of that welfare recipient in England who lives in public housing, you know, Harry. And the woman that he married, whose skin is a shade or two darker than a grocery store paper bag. Yeah, they had a baby. So what did CNN put up? Yeah, of course they did. They couldn't resist. It's a picture of Harry and Meghan riding in their royal wedding carriage at the expense of the people of the United Kingdom. Again, subsidized welfare transportation. Sure. And the headline, how black will the royal baby be? No, really. I know, you could drive a truck through that pause. Yeah, I've looked at that photo a dozen times today, and I can't make it okay. But CNN carefully offered a caveat. Here's why we should be cautious. Cautious? The royal baby, which has already resurrected some of the most dangerous stereotypes about race. Royal baby watch has already resurrected some of the most dangerous stereotypes about race. And in many cases, the commentators who are reinforcing these stereotypes are totally unaware of the damage. My ass! Unaware, please. So what's the scale? I mean, how black can the royal baby be? He's going to have one dark-skinned grandparent. That would make him, I think, J. Edgar Hoover black, wouldn't it? But then again, there's that old one-drop rule. And so, given the fact that the royal baby will be seventh in line to the throne, but then again, there's that history and anthropology thing that happens with us being human and everything. Because the genotype of folks in England isn't quite what it might seem. There was a lot of genetic intermixing back before the European colonialists invented the idea of race. We know, for instance, and one of my favorite people over on the BBC to watch is Mary Beard. She took unmitigated amounts of hell for pointing out that there were shades of skin tone from all over the Roman Empire, all over Roman Britain. People with actual records. People from North Africa. And of course, there was a North African emperor, and we've got busts of him and his kid And it's not like they were that mysterious lost tribe of white folks from North Africa. Mm-mm. No. Dark-skinned people. Didn't seem to drive the empire crazy. The empire went toddling along for a while. But nonetheless, CNN wants to know how black will the royal baby be? James in Illinois. One drop rule. He's black, black, black. Jack in Shreveport. Units of measurement. Is there some kind of British unit similar to quatroon or whatever? I think those were actually adopted. The Spanish invented them, and then the rest of the world. I think one of those might be a Star Trek reference, but you know the terms I'm talking about. Oh, I know. I'm sorry, but I know. Prince Harry, Ron and Raleigh says, come on, Bob, Prince Harry's no more at fault for the family he was born into than you or I. At least he made a choice to serve in the military and marry a woman many people thought he shouldn't have. I don't love the royals, nor do I hate them. I think that's a fair statement. They're just not somebody I think about much. Despite the fact that there's any number of TV programs still about them. Yeah, a little pop culture reference here. Just on a lark, because it's been advertised. I watched the first episode. Agnes and I watched the first episode of The Spanish Princess. Oh, my God. What dreck. And it's not lost that there's a young man who's referred to, and of course they cast him as a pale, sort of freckly, redheaded fellow named Prince Harry. He would go on to be Henry VIII. And an insufferable princess from Spain who would go on to be Catherine of Aragon. Who would go on to, spoilers, but then again, it's history, who would go on to be the cause of the Protestant Reformation in England because Henry VIII couldn't get divorced from her. So he decided to be the head of the church himself and divorce her, but he didn't cut her head off. So winning for her, right? Picking up on a previous email, Randy in PA says, well, the royal baby's black, 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 as blessed by white Swedish Jesus. Yes, 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 white Swedish Jesus, crucified on a cross from IKEA. You know it. Mm-hmm. So, that's fun. Doctor Who and Elizabeth the Tenth. That's funny, Elizabeth the Tenth. Basically, I rule, yeah. What's that? Monique says, my uncle told me today white people always scared of us black people. Meanwhile, the enemy is within. He meant white people are destroying this country with their fear and hate, even themselves with the opioids. What's Trump done to even address that but talk? Those are people in his base. But then again, people fought a civil war over slavery when they didn't even own slaves, so there's that. Of course, a stupid question, but why do Caucasians risk skin cancer to get darker, Bob? I don't know. It was once said to me, a healthy glow. It's never something I tried to do because, well, if I get out under the sun, or the refrigerator light bulb for that matter, I burn and I blister and it hurts a lot. And I peel, and I itch, and I'm just as pink as I started out before. So, no, I don't think it qualifies as jealousy on my part, Monique, but then again, I'm not. At one point in time, women would use before, like, big-time commercial tanning oils and so forth. And I'll bet some women in this audience may even remember this. They would use a mixture of baby oil and iodine. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I remember. Well, I do know why I remember that, because I had a sister who did that. I had sisters who did that. you know, in Alabama. Mm-hmm. Busy evening ahead of us here. But while we're talking about the inequities of the criminal justice system, a report out of a prison in Alabama called the Limestone Correctional Facility still has chain gangs. And they have a ritual. Well, I wouldn't say it's a torture. They have a torture program there, and when one is sent to the Limestone Correctional Facility, even though the prisoners have gone through what's called entrance procedures, body cavity searches, metal detectors, drug dogs. But there's a guy named Captain Patrick Robinson at the Limestone Correctional Facility who came up with something, and I'm sure he's terribly proud of himself, called bucket detail. And so it was that on March the 25th, 2019, not quite 2 months ago, a man named Christopher Caldwell was sent to the Limestone Correctional Facility in Alabama. And he was sentenced, I guess, to, I mean, I don't know if that's the word you use, ordered, to bucket detail. You remember when America was shocked, I tell you, shocked, to find out that people who were prison guards in real life back here in Merca and were sent as military police to be prison guards at Abu Ghraib outside Baghdad in Iraq during our filthy little war, our filthy illegal war for which no one has ever been held accountable against the innocent people of Iraq and in which a million innocent non-combatant Iraqi civilians died. Yeah, remember when we sent those people there? Right, and you remember the piles of human flesh and the horror stories and a woman named Lindy England who became the poster child and men with dog leashes around their necks who were forced to perform things that were culturally not just taboo but horrifying. Remember all that? I do. And I remember saying at the time that given the way that our prison system itself works here, that it's no surprise that we would do that to people in Iraq because we impose similar indignities and brutalities upon people here. And that brings us back to Christopher Caldwell. March the 25th, 2019, in which reports indicate that he was rendered almost immobile because he had been ordered into the bucket detail. They taped up his pants legs. They shackled his belly, his feet, and his hands. They shackled his handcuffs to his belly so that he couldn't move his hands above his waist. And then they fixed him onto a bucket. And they told him that his processing would not be complete until he had defecated in the bucket 5 times. I'm sorry, 6. The screws told him that they would not release him until he had shit in the bucket 6 times. He spent 5 days atop the bucket. He screamed. He begged. He pleaded. And when they weren't simply ignoring him, the guards came over and threatened to mace him, pepper spray him, just like the cop threatened to tase Sandra Bland. People in those circumstances eat like a dog. They have to stick their face into their food. If they want to even try to sleep, they have to roll off the bucket, which then means that they get the contents of the bucket all over them. People were interviewed for this story, which you can find over at Truthout. And many of the people who were interviewed have to be referred to by a pseudonym, because if word gets out that people are talking about what's going on inside the Limestone Correctional Facility, their loved ones in that facility may well face further torture, among other things. Surveillance cameras aren't particularly well provided at that prison, so it's open season among the prisoners upon each other and the guards on the prisoners. The mother explained, lockup is so crowded that ADOC, the Alabama Department of Corrections, started putting men in closets with the bucket for several days. Back on April the 2nd, 2019, the Department of Justice released a report and said that such prisons in Alabama, including the Limestone Correctional Facility, are great big aggregations of cruel and unusual punishment. And that the Alabama Department of Corrections doesn't have much interest in protecting prisoners from prisoner-on-prisoner violence, prisoner-on-prisoner sexual abuse, and God knows whatever the guards decide to do to them. Witness who is being referred to as Jane said she's been extorted by lieutenants and guards at a different facility for over $10,000. Guards stabbed my son. Then I got a call from a lieutenant who said things would get worse for him if I didn't send money. Another mother was molested by a female guard on one of the visits. This is America. But this is also another one of those moments where I feel the need to add a reminder. Back when Abu Ghraib happened, Donald Trump wasn't president, but Republicans were damned well in charge. This kind of shit happens in prisons all across the country, regardless of whether a Democrat is in the White House or not. If a Democrat is in the White House, sometimes actions will be taken to try to ameliorate these things
Some. But not lot, not much. And certainly not entirely. And what's that? Ron and Raleigh says, not cruel and unusual. According to the current SCOTUS, the bucket detail would not be considered cruel and unusual punishment. Gotta love conservative jurisprudence. Well, yeah. And things like that are often accompanied by statements like, well, hell, if they didn't want that to happen to them, I should have broke the law and the fire supplies. Prison ain't supposed to be fun. Which in turn sort of blows past the whole idea that when you take someone's liberty away, you become liable for their treatment while they are in your custody. But let's not get all angry at Texas and Alabama, because Texas and Alabama. How about Florida, too? From the Miami Herald. A jailed and pregnant mentally ill woman. And that phrase alone is enough to make a civilized person shriek. Okay, well, a point well taken, Brian. Brian says, Bob. Oh, you're going to get a note from Ron. It's supper dinner time for some of us. Not about the bucket detail, but for saying the Republicans were in charge. I know. Nauseating, isn't it? Meanwhile, let's see. Hillary, Elbert in Rhode Island says, Hillary gave a speech to the executive board of Goldman Sachs during the 2016 campaign. She did not give the media a transcript of her speech. Trump went totally crazy about the fact that she did not do it. Well, so did the Bernie people. During his campaign, Trump promised to drain the swamp in D.C. He was talking about how Wall Street financial people control Congress. After he was elected, Trump picked Steve Mnuchin to be his Treasury Secretary. Trump never revealed that Mnuchin heard Hillary's speech. How about that? I remember talking about it back in 2016. I said the smart thing to do would be to release the tape, release the transcript, own the issue instead of constantly being in response to it, and let the world hear that she did what you do when you go and you give a speech to these Wall Street types. You stand up there at the microphone and you tell them that they all shit ice cream and that they are the best people on planet Earth, and they all clap and you cash the check. The check clears. The balance shows a nice, and you go on about your business. This is not what happened. But that line, a jailed and pregnant mentally ill woman. This is before we get to the verb or anything that happened to the jailed and pregnant mentally ill woman. In a country that considers itself civilized, you do not have stories that have paragraphs, that have sentences that begin with the phrase, a jailed and pregnant mentally ill woman. Because you don't put mentally ill women, let alone mentally ill women who are pregnant, wait for it, because liberal, in jail. Then again, a civilized country also has adequate mental health facilities for the members of its culture who, through no fault of their own, become or are mentally ill. Once upon a time, this was such a country. But under the guise of being humane, back during the presidential terms of old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan. We shut down the state hospitals all over the country. We shut them down here in West Virginia. And having shut them down, we engaged in this fiction of mainstreaming and normalization. In other words, telling America's mentally ill population to pull themselves up by their own bootstraps and quit being so gosh darn crazy and engage in some goddamned American exceptionalism and what's wrong with you. This story just made my skin crawl. Do they have stories in Japan that begin a jailed and pregnant mentally ill woman? How about Australia? A jailed and pregnant mentally ill woman, unless the rest of the sentence is, was given badly needed mental health treatment and prenatal care. How about Germany, Italy, the UK, Sweden, Denmark, France? I mean, I kind of expect this happens in China. Maybe even Iran. How about Israel? Over at Haaretz or the Jerusalem Post, do they have stories that begin, a jailed and pregnant mentally ill Israeli woman? No. Now, granted, they probably have stories that begin, a jailed and pregnant mentally ill woman in Gaza was struck by a precision-guided missile funded by the United States last night. Mother and baby are deader than Pharaoh's cat and not doing well at all. Granted. But in countries that call themselves civilized, you don't have stories like this. No, you have to be in the greatest country in the history of the world on earth now, today, forever, in the universe under God, to get a sentence that says a jailed and pregnant mentally ill woman was forced to deliver her child alone in an isolation cell last month as corrections officers ignored her cries for help, Broward County's public defender charged on Friday. In a letter to Broward Sheriff Gregory Tony, public defender Howard Finkelstein wrote that North Broward Bureau Jail inmate Tammy Jackson began complaining to staffers of contractions at 3:16 a.m. on April 10th. By 10 a.m., he said she was lying in her cell by herself, holding her newborn daughter. She was forced to deliver her baby alone, Finkelstein wrote in a two-page letter that also demanded a review of detention policies. Meanwhile, the jail, on the other hand, said in an email, a well-path medical team, including a physician and two nurses, attended to the mother and child. Child Protective Investigation Section was notified, and the baby was placed with an appropriate caregiver. Well, now, how's about that? That's a roundabout way of saying, yeah, we let her deliver the baby herself because we frankly didn't give a flying fuck. But after she delivered the baby herself, we sent some folks in and took the baby away from her and put it in foster care. See, we love babies. She was at full term, near to giving birth, when she was booked on March 27th. And the facility was aware that she was mentally ill. And when she told them she was going into contractions instead of taking her to the hospital to give birth, they called an on-call physician. That was 3 o'clock in the morning. 4.5 hours later, the doctor said, I'm on my way. 9 a.m., she was bleeding in her cell by herself. I guess she's lucky that nobody came and tased her. She did have a mental competency evaluation late last month, according to the Miami Herald. Her mental illness was described as significant. And after that, well, who knows? But remember, Florida's just crawling with right-to-lifers. Yeah. Jesus. Ron in Raleigh says, speaking of prison, after the citizens of Florida voted in droves to allow ex-felons to get their voting rights back, the Republican swine in the Florida legislature have decided that having large numbers of freed Negroes voting was beyond the pale. So they're working on a new fashion poll tax. You can't vote until you pay all fines. Newfangled poll tax. You can't vote until you pay all fines and court costs associated with your former incarceration. Who gets to do that ciphering? Well, the state will happily do that ciphering, and they will cipher interest into it so that it will be impossible to ever pay off everything because the interest just keeps racking up. That's the funny thing about interest. Scott asks, a phrase comes to mind, Bob, cruel and unusual punishment. Are there no people's advocate legal eagles in Alabama to come to the aid of these poor souls? Supposedly yes, but mostly no. Because Public Defender Services is kept on something approaching life support. So that it can't get all uppity and start asking questions. Because remember, prison ain't supposed to be fun. I never knew of those good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered evangelicals thinking that same-sex rape was okay, but apparently it is, because prison's not supposed to be fun. Yep, I remember. Brubaker, 1980. Flavio says, do you remember this movie about the Arkansas prison scandal? I do indeed. Yeah, something like that. Randy pointing out, what's that I heard? The U.S. has 5% of the world's population, but 25% of the world's prisoners. Well, us Americans are just real bad people, you got to understand. We're just bad people. We break the law all the damn time. So, let's take it to Ohio with a side trip to Georgia. Georgia Governor Brian Kemp, who, of course, got into the governor's office in Georgia by engaging in a years-long campaign to stop people from being able to, you know, vote. Well, he stepped up for the rights of somebody else today. Now, it's not really fair to say that he stepped up for anybody's rights. Because what he stepped up for were little wads of tissue that are basically indistinguishable from those little brine shrimp you used to get when you were a kid called sea monkeys. In what they hope will be the death blow to Roe versus Wade, Georgia joined a number of other states today in signing a fetal, in passing a fetal heartbeat bill. It passed both houses of the Georgia legislature, and it was signed into law by Governor Brian Kemp because he loves the precious little fetuses. They were a little bit late to the game, though, because Ohio beat them to the punch. Now, if you hear this story, and God knows why would you be listening to White Wing News, but if you should happen to run across this story over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, or at, say, One America News Now, what is One America News Now, you might ask? One America News Now is a news network for people who think that Fox is too full of commie pinko sissy liberals. But you may hear this story, but you won't hear all of this. You won't hear the rest of the story. And that is that a man by the name of Juan Leon Gomez, age 26, of Massillon, Ohio, has been arrested. He's been arrested for raping a little 11-year-old girl. The little girl's parents, well, they reported her missing. And eventually, the investigation led to the place where Juan Leon Gomez was living, where his roommate let police search the home. The cops went upstairs and found the little 11-year-old girl in a closet, a bedroom closet. So, yes, Juan Leon Gomez has been arrested on charges of rape of the little 11-year-old girl. He's also been charged with contributing to the unruliness or delinquency of a child. And, wait for it, obstructing official business. That's the Ohio State version of obstructing justice. Now, the ICE gang has put a hold on Juan Leon Gomez. And so to the extent that you hear this story at all over in the right-wing swamp, cesspit, what you'll hear is that another one of them illegals has done raped one of our poor little American girls. As horrifying as it is, that is not the story. Because while there is unspeakable agony and trauma and harm that attends any rape, the legislature and the governor of Ohio went the extra mile to make sure that a little 11-year-old girl gets a double helping of agony and misery and trauma arising from her rape. Because, you see, the little 11-year-old girl is pregnant. You remember how I said that Georgia was late to the game signing the fetal heartbeat bill? Well, in Ohio, they call it the Human Rights Protection Act. And it extends a ban on women's reproductive care all the way down to the 5 or 6 week mark. So given the fact that they now know that this little 11-year-old girl is pregnant, she is also too far along for her to be able to have anyone acting on her behalf. She's too young as an 11-year-old to make the choice for herself because Merca. She's too far along for anybody to be able to argue that she should be able to terminate a rape pregnancy because of Ohio's brutal, vicious law against women. Yeah. Ohio's law contains no language about rape or incest. No. It just says that the little sea monkey is more important than the female carrying it at all costs. If there is any hope in this scenario, it is that these laws are all being challenged in court, but that is a thin reed upon which to hang the hopes of an 11-year-old little girl. Because pasty-faced, doughy old white men and white woman judges, again, care more about the fucking sea monkey than they do the living, breathing child. So there's every chance in the world that this 11-year-old will be forced to carry a pregnancy to term. And deal with something that an 11-year-old girl should never, ever have to deal with. Whether we're talking about the consequences of a rape or the consequences of a pregnancy. There's your Republican Party. They've been working on these goddamn fetal heartbeat bills since Christ was a corporal in the army of God. It certainly predates Donald Trump. And while I understand the need, the desperate need, for us to rid ourselves of him legally, peacefully, and constitutionally, if a miracle should occur and we should be successful in that, if we stop and call time out and throw a little party for ourselves and say, you know, what good citizens are we, without understanding what motivated and drove and enabled every last vile thing that this regime has done, then we only guarantee that we've maybe given ourselves a moment's reprieve. As Monique points out, you know these sick bastards get sexually aroused by this. Ugh, that includes Trump, his minions, and cult fans. And, of course, the incels. We're in danger. By the way, where's Vice President Pence on this? She was pregnant, for God's sake, the woman in Miami. Well, she was the wrong kind of pregnant. She wasn't pregnant and willing to give to Republican causes. Monique says, where are all the GOP right-to-lifers, huh? Love the fetus, hate the child. Well, I'll tell you what, aren't you glad I'm not queuing up Lee Greenwood singing about how America needs to be all God-blessed? If tomorrow all I ever had was a fetus in my life. Right. Jimmy, going back to my remarks on the shabby state of affairs of mental health in this country. You're correct, Bob. POTUS 666 was the cause of the bag ladies, people eating dog food, and homelessness. Well, why don't they just ask for a loan from their parents? Steve in New York pointing out that 2010 incarceration numbers in the United States, 450 out of 100,000 incarcerated are white, 831 out of 100,000 are Hispanic, and 2,306 out of 100,000 are black. We incarcerate as many or more than Cuba and Turkmenistan. Yay us, Steve says, ever so sarcastically. And then, there's the breaking news that happened just before airtime. It's happened again. Multiple victims in shooting at a Colorado school. Ironically, not far from Columbine. Undersheriff of Douglas County, Colorado, Holly Nicholson Cluth says 8 people are confirmed to have been injured. There are, mercifully, no confirmed deaths. The whole thing happened just a little bit before 2 o'clock this afternoon, Mountain Time, at Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math School Highlands Ranch in Highlands Ranch, Colorado, a suburb of Denver. Seventeen-year-old high school junior, the son of Fernando Montoya, was shot 3 times. Speaking to KMGH-TV, Montoya said, a guy pulled a pistol, I'm not sure, out of a guitar case and started to shoot. He said, even though he got shot, he'll be okay. We're so lucky. There are 1,850 students K through 12th grade at this charter school campus. Charter school, that means a corporation runs it for profit. A fifth grader said, I tried to run with my life. I was in study hall, and I see a bunch of kids running out and saying, school shooter, and I'm like, what? Is this real or fake? Christian's mom said she got a text from a friend who said, guns, shooting, oh my God, that's how I knew. It is said they don't think there are any additional suspects than the one shooter. Two suspects are in custody, according to the Associated Press. And so we're talking about it. I'm horrifyingly at a loss to what to say about it, except to say one thing. Nothing's going to change. As long as Mitch McConnell is in the Senate of the United States, as long as Republicans control the Senate of the United States, as long as Donald Trump is President of the United States, this is going to continue to happen. Because they love the money they get from the National Ruble Association more than they love our children. And the pasty-faced, doughy gun goobers love their guns more than they love the children of this nation. It ain't complicated. It's not a mystery. It is truly that simple. And another piece of breaking news we probably need to go into in short order. From the New York Times earlier today. Oopsie. 5 takeaways from 10 years of Trump tax figures. Dateline, May 7th, 2019, by Suzanne Craig and Russ Butner. The Times has obtained 10 years of previously unrevealed figures from the president's federal income tax returns. The tax numbers for the years 1985 through 1994 paint a far bleaker picture of Mr. Trump's deal-making abilities and financial condition than the one he has long put forth. He has lost billions. During a tumultuous decade of fevered acquisitions and spectacular collapse, Mr. Trump's core businesses, largely casinos, hotels, and retail space in apartment buildings, ran up $1.17 billion in losses. One Charles J. Harder, a pettifogger for the president, said that the numbers are demonstrably false. The paper's statements about the president's tax returns and business from 30 years ago are highly inaccurate. IRS transcripts, particularly before the days of electronic filing, are notoriously inaccurate and would not be able to provide a reasonable picture of any taxpayer's return. This is, of course, completely at odds with reality. Data used to create such transcripts had undergone quality control for decades and have been used to analyze economic trends and set national policy. That, according to Mark J. Mazur, director of the nonpartisan Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center in Washington. And, of course, the tax numbers went back to the Klansman. Not the title character for D.W. Griffith's Birth of a Nation. I'm talking, of course, about Donald J. Trump's pappy, Fred Trump. The problem, though, is that it doesn't give us what we need. We need recent tax numbers. Several takeaways, though, from that story. According to the New York Times, one, Trump was deep in the red even as he peddled a deal-making advice book, Trump, Art of the Deal. He reported a loss in 1985 of $46.1 million, with a $5.6 million carryover for earlier years. In multiple years, he appears to have lost more money than nearly any other individual taxpayer. This guy's a fuck-up. Paid no federal income tax for 8 of the 10 years. Made millions posing as a corporate raider until investors realized he never followed through. His interest income spiked in 1989 at $52.9 million, but the source remains a mystery. Public findings from New Jersey casino regulators at the time show no evidence that he owned anything capable of generating that much interest, nor is there any such evidence in a 1990 report on his financial condition prepared by accountants he hired at his banker's request. And by 1992, he was reporting income only at $3.6 million. Again, what was that line from the hedge fund billionaire the other day? I'm a billionaire. Donald Trump is a clown living on credit. And right there, you've got a good snapshot of why he's so terrified for anybody to see his taxes. One, he's a grifter. Two, he's not good at it. Three, he's damn near broker than the Ten Commandments. That's why the Black Knights of the Hudson, visiting the White House yesterday, apparently didn't even get the fucking hamburgers. I'm sorry, hamburgers. So we're almost at the halfway point of the program. Thank you to Charlene for jumping in on Randy's When Billionaires Choose, You Lose challenge. And thanks to our buddy Robert in Australia. Robert met the challenge in his own right with a note. Welcome to Medicare Australia. Don't I wish. Don't I wish. But remember, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, forever, in the universe under God. Well, we can't do anything as complicated as Medicare for All, because what would the hedge fund billionaires say? Right? So taken together, Randy's challenge is met, and that means we've got $156 to go to get even for this evening and up through this evening. 156, which is not insurmountable. So thank you, Robert in Australia. And thank you to Charlene in Rhode Island. Let's take a little break here because it's Tuesday. We will not have the Green News Report on Thursday because I think Brad and Desi are on the road. But I'll be curious to see here if there's a little something in here about a little something going on nearby that we may be talking about in a moment or two. This is The Horn for the 7th day of May, 2019. I'm Bob.
It's Tuesday, May 7, 2019.
Human action is hurting nature, and that damage to nature is in turn hurting humans.
Landmark United Nations report warns humans are pushing 1 million species to the brink of extinction. Trump administration repeals offshore drilling safety rules implemented after deadly BP oil rig explosion. Plus, Upper Midwest flooding in 2019 breaks all-time historic records.
All of those historic records and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The time for action is now. This report hopefully will stimulate the world to report. Thank you.
Is he drunk?
No, he's British.
No comment. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I'm shocked at how little coverage this is getting, but the Upper Midwest has been flooded for weeks and weeks and weeks.
Yes, this week the Mississippi River broke all-time historic flood records in parts of Illinois and Iowa. The river has been in flood stage for more than 42 days, and that has never before occurred since record-keeping began about 150 years ago. Meanwhile, the Trump Interior Department late last week repealed safety rules governing offshore drilling that were put in place by the Obama administration after the explosion of BP's Deepwater Horizon rig in 2010.
Who needs safety rules?
That explosion killed 11 men and triggered the largest offshore oil spill in U.S. history. It killed more than a million seabirds, fish, and hundreds of marine animals. But the weaker safety rules will save the industry $1 billion over the next 10 years. So there's that.
Incredible.
Also, this week, on Monday, the Trump administration lifted endangered species protections from an endangered beetle in Oklahoma at the request of the oil and gas industry.
Naturally.
To enable the industry to build pipelines more quickly. It's the latest endangered American species to lose protections under the Trump administration. And it's all the more remarkable that Trump's latest attack on endangered species was announced on the same day that the United Nations published a landmark report warning that humans are altering the course of the natural world. We are accelerating the extinction of plants, insects, and animals at rates unprecedented in human history. In the most comprehensive study of life on the planet ever conducted, scientists with the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services has concluded that up to 1 million of the planet's species are on track to go extinct, many within just decades, because of humans' insatiable consumption. The researchers blame human activities, farming, logging, poaching, fishing, mining, building, and more, including the resulting air and water pollution, and, of course, man-made climate change. They say humans have altered about 75% of the planet's lands and two-thirds of its oceans. Land degradation has reduced the productivity of global land surfaces. A third of the world's fish stocks are overfished. Plastic pollution and pesticide runoff have created more than 400 dead zones in the ocean.
This is not very good news, is it?
It is not.
This is a major study, about 500 researchers looking at 15,000 different scientific papers to compile this. This is a very troubling report.
The international team of scientists also warns that these losses are threatening nature's ability to provide humans with clean air, water, and good soil, posing grave consequences because hurting nature is hurting humans and the ecosystem services that we rely on, our life support system, and our ability to feed ourselves, says UN Biodiversity Chief Sir Robert Watson.
Nature helps to protect us against climate change, pollution, flood control, invasive alien species, etc. So as we convert our native forests and grasslands, we're not only losing species, but we're losing regulating services, we're degrading our land, and in the long term, we're threatening human well-being. We're threatening food security, water security, energy security.
But the scientists say it is not too late to repair these problems, that there is still time to change course through transformative action. Here's UN ecologist and study co-author Dr. Anne Lara-Gaudry at the press conference announcing the report.
What we would like at the end of this report is to really give the world a real message of hope. We don't want that people feel discouraged, that there is nothing that can be done, that we've lost the battle, because we have not lost the battle. And if given a chance, nature will reconquer its rights and will prevail.
The report recommends a suite of major policy changes and says that individuals can also shift their own consumption habits.
Does it make me bad that I was listening to Sir Robert Watson talk about invasion of alien species and thinking it might be nice if someone came to save us?
Be careful what you wish for. But nobody's coming to save us. We're going to have to save ourselves.
For much more on that report and all of the other stories we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Who's gonna save the world tonight? Who's gonna bring it back to life?
We are at the halfway mark of the program this evening, and thanks to Randy's challenge and the responses to it, only $156 to go to finish the evening, which means we're actually inside tonight's fundraising goal. I hate talking about this. I despise it. But it's how we keep this all going. So, you know, if we knock that out, that'd be great. Nope, the story did not make the Green News Report this evening, but it is worth mentioning. It comes out of West Virginia. I've talked about the Mountain Valley Pipeline from time to time. Oh, hey, a new Patreon contributor. Thank you, Joey. Thank you, Joey, very kindly indeed. That's tremendous. The more, the merrier. I've talked about the Mountain Valley Pipeline. It runs from northern West Virginia down through southern West Virginia, through Virginia, and now there's an extension planned into North Carolina. And this takes courage. No matter which side of this issue you're on, this takes courage, and I presume that, like me, everybody in this community is on one side of the issue. Summers County is only a couple of counties south of me here. They're getting ready to run the Mountain Valley Pipeline, you know, for natural gas, which, not if it explodes someday, will explode someday. And God only knows how much damage it will do. They're getting ready to run it across the Greenbrier River. And the West Virginia Department of Environmental Pollution, Protection, recently rewrote its rules so that the Mountain Valley Pipeline people would not be in violation, because they were, the way they were going about it. And so a little while back, an individual chained themselves in an act of civil disobedience to, I believe, a bulldozer. Well, the cops came along with the bolt cutters, and they cut the bolts off, and they took the protester away and charged him with terrorism. No shit, terrorism. Because the opposition to this filthy damn pipeline, which has been underreported and undercovered, is significant because of the harm that it represents to everywhere this stinking thing passes. So in response to that person being charged with terrorism, these are young people. These are young people who are willing to permanently alter their futures in order to try to do the right thing. And so after that person was charged, another individual got inside a piece of pipe that they were getting ready to bury for going under the Greenbrier River. And on the outside, they painted a picture, or they painted some words.
MVP, the true terrorist. And they also warned person in pipe. And that individual has since been arrested near Pence, ironically, Pence Springs, West Virginia. The hashtag, no MVP, no pipelines. The person putting their life at hazard inside the pipeline offered the following as a justification. I've entered this pipe in an attempt to slow the devastation of the Mountain Valley Pipeline and the Atlantic Coast Pipeline will cause to the ecosystem I grew to love while camping here as a child and that I now call my home. While the fossil fuel industry and the state wish to portray us as a threat to the public, the only threat we pose is to the profits generated by these pointless projects. And the problem is the law in the state cares more about those profits than it does about the people. That's just a simple statement of fact, and it's the same reason that that nearly 1,000 people die in West Virginia's mountaintop removal counties every year as a result of the toxic dust from all the detonations on all the mountaintop removal sites, because government and law in this state and in this country care more about the money than they do about any living, breathing human being, except the living, breathing human beings who control the money. The person in the pipe said, still, perhaps these obstructive acts do terrify those with an interest in maintaining the status quo. Perhaps they are reminded of the contradiction of infinite growth on a finite planet. Perhaps they realize that a world without domination and profit is possible and tremble at the prospect. I kind of doubt that because they know they own the system. However, the terrorism I see is hidden in plain sight. Is a pipeline carrying explosives through your front yard not terrorism? What about the ongoing eradication of non-human species? Or the creation of a planet that is uninhabitable? What about the police occupations of poor, black, and brown neighborhoods and the military occupations around the world? The millions of humans who are locked in cages, the need to sell our labor to survive, the surveillance and commodification of everyday life. Those with limited imagination say this subtler terrorism keeps us safe. Yet at best, it leaves us isolated, anxious, and depressed. At worst, it leaves us dead. Chances are you already know someone confronting these crises head on. The question is, will you join us? Everything you need is already present, and the fire of resistance has already been lit. So make your plans, scheme your schemes, and I'll see you on the other side of the pipe. Meanwhile, an affected resident who lives near the Mountain Valley Pipeline route, Neil LaFerriere, owns Blackberry Springs Farm, as well as Blackberry Botanicals. Someone just trying to make a living and leave as little imprint on the planet in the process as possible, said in regard to this direct action, we have discovered the hard way that the agencies and organizations put in place to protect us spend most of their resources ensuring that the projects that are polluting our waters, our air, and ruining our farms can be completed. This leaves us with only one option, to stand up for our families, our neighbors, and our communities via peaceful protests and direct action. This is the only option we have left. We have to stand up, or we just get run over. Got a yardstick handy? Well, if you do, you know, okay, for the civilized world, a meter stick. Well, if you stand that on end, then the Mountain Valley Pipeline is another 6 inches more than a yard. It's 42 inches in diameter. It runs 303 miles. When it's operational, the plans are for it to be filled with pressurized gas from toxic fracking operations. And yeah, for those of you in North Carolina, it's going to go 70 miles into your state. It's already made a mess of things. But the fact is, whatever mess they've already made compares, well, there's no comparison between that and what's going to happen when the damn thing blows up. And here's another little fact. When the damn thing blows up, it will not blow up because of any terrorist activity or any environmentalists. It will blow up because that is what pipelines do. And depending on where it blows up, well, that's the only way we'll know, have any idea of how many people are imperiled. But it literally is high explosives, as the statement noted. It's a matter of high explosives running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, 3,650 days a decade. Through places where human beings live, work, play, and love. And none of that matters to the people who are going to make the money off of this nightmare, because they don't live anywhere near it. You want to do some pipeline capitalism? Cool. I say, if you want to do that, let's just tell the chief executive officer of the pipeline company that they have to live right on top of the pipeline. Or better yet, on top of the pipeline, right next to a compressor station. That way, if anything goes wrong, they'll be the first to know. And we can pick up the pieces of them at our leisure. Yeah, it is. Ron and Raleigh ask, is this the pipeline they want to run under the Appalachian Trail? I guess that doesn't violate any environmental regulations. Well, not if there aren't any regulations left to violate, it doesn't. And if it looks like there might be, well, that's why you change the rules in mid-job. Jimmy in the Great Northwest says, yeah, we should be calling the oil barons terrorists for real. Well, they use terror to impose their will and enforce political change. That's the very damn definition. Oh, okay. Okay, so Joey, I know who Joey is now. Joey signed up for a Patreon subscription. That's our buddy Joe in Cleveland. Says, sorry I can't make it to the Malloy Fest in June, but we'll catch you at the next one. I'll be looking for you. And if we ever do one here, you're more than happy to come down. That pipeline, says Steve in New York, something tells me it doesn't route through the yards of the bosses. Oh, well, no, it would. If that was the case, it'd have to be running through, somewhere near New York City. But no. Hell, it doesn't even run through the yards of middle management. Shit, the people laying the pipeline don't even live anywhere near it. They're laying the pipeline. They got better sense than to live anywhere near it. They know how it's being built. Oh, and by the way, speaking of how it's being built, Boeing. I don't know how it works out. Maybe it's just a little touch of prescience or maybe common sense. And I have to count on you to have listened to this program for a while to know I'm giving you the skinny. But months ago, I suggested that maybe it's not the best idea in the world to fly on any of the planes that Boeing manufactured at its non-union shitty facility in South Carolina Stan. Oopsie. Yeah, it turns out that the government allowed Boeing's manufacturers, workers, to self-regulate their work, to self-inspect the work that they themselves had done. Ain't that just something? And it turns out that as a result of this self-regulation, there was a lot of bad work done on these planes. Bolts fucked up, seats loose. Now, when they got caught, Boeing said, well, that may be the case, rumpf, but we caught it all before we sent it on to the people who bought the planes. We definitely did that. Definitely. Yes, definitely. Yeah, I'm guessing they probably didn't. But that self-regulation thing, again, that ain't Donald Trump. Donald Trump is a stupid man. He doesn't have the time or the inclination or the brain power to come up with these ideas that he parrots. Job-killing regulations has been a battle cry, Jesus, for the entirety of the 2 decades we've been in the 21st century, and maybe longer. Self-inspections at meat processing plants. I remember during the Obama administration, when the Obama... is it the Department of Agriculture or the Food and Drug Administration? I can't remember which. They came up with this pilot plan for chicken processing plants to self-regulate the inspection of chickens. And penguins is practically chickens. And then they got a report that said it doesn't work. Bad things are coming out of the chicken plants. But the Obama administration said, well, hell. What's a little chicken shit in the chickens, right? And it blew through. Like shit through a goose. Same thing with pork. And now, aircraft. By the way, it wasn't like there was a problem with the manufacture of little two-seater planes at Boeing. This was a system-wide problem with the 787 Dreamliner. Uh-oh. Going back to the pipeline for a minute, a little bit of expertise coming from James in Illinois. Pipes are joined together by welding. Even if your welds are perfect, the next guy's won't be. Inspectors could be smart, but I've met some real idiots. And even if everything is perfect, they just can't figure on what Mother Nature is going to throw at it. No. But the problem is, they don't care. See, the bean counters at Mountain Valley Pipeline, whoever owns that filthy outfit, have already cost accounted and factored in for what it's going to do to Mountain Valley Pipeline's profit and loss statement when the fucking thing blows up. And they've figured out how many people they'll have to pay off for killing, and they've jimmied the system in such a way that they still make a prophet.
Yay!
Steve in New York asks, at what point are we just going to make it official and change the nation's name to USA Inc.? Well, you wouldn't want to do that, Steve, because it might smarten up the chumps. Isn't it funny how this relentless desire for profit seems to just always be popping up in the midst of our desire to have a halfway decent little life before we shuffle off this mortal coil. I know. Let's run over to the stress line and see who's there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Happy Tuesday to you again, Bob. It's me, Reggie, from the Katy, Georgia again. Yet another beautiful summer-like day.
Yay!
Spring summer-like day.
I love those. We had one too, but it's over now. It's over tomorrow.
Right.
And it's going to rain all the way through my weekend, Reggie, and I'm getting tired of this.
Well, you should talk to the meteorologist or better to God Almighty himself or to Mother Nature or to Jesus.
I mean, how's a man supposed to barbecue when it's raining? I'm going to have to go and spring
know.
For one of those. I'm going to have to go spring for a little tent or something to cover it up, and hopefully I won't melt it in the process.
Right. Well, how do you feel about Facebook banning 3 or 4 people, one of them being Minister Louis Farrakhan and the rest of them being, you know, Alex Jones and Laura Loomer and somebody else?
I don't know, but I heard the audio of Laura Looney losing her mind over it, and I got to tell you, that was some 200-proof Schadenfreude. That was good stuff.
And Milo. Why do you say that, Bob?
Oh, well, no, I mean, Laura Loomer went on Alex Jones's program and lost her itsy-bitsy, teeny-tiny little mind.
Right. Well, they banned him, too.
Her. Oh, what, Milo? Yeah.
Yeah, they banned him too. But they also, you know, they also banned Minister Louis Farrakhan and somebody else.
And Alex Jones.
Alex Jones. They banned him.
Oh, here it is. You'll enjoy this. Here we go, Reggie. Here we go. Stand by.
Yeah. Go ahead, man.
Okay, so after she got word that she had been banned from Facebook, Laura Looney was invited on Alex Jones's program, where she proceeded to throw a world-class hissy. Here we go.
Crazy, but right. What are they doing? I want to know what people are actually going to do. My life is ruined. Does anybody understand how ruined my life is? I'm sick of it. I don't want to listen to people tell me that I'm a conspiracy theorist. They don't know what it's like to be me. My life is ruined, Alex.
No, I understand. I just think you need to go with it.
That's the best part. That's what makes it art, Reggie. When Alex Jones, a man who tears his shirt off and shrieks into the microphone, says, I know, I've been there. I think you just need to go with it. Because the fact of the matter is, he doesn't care if Laura Loomer falls apart, because that's one less person working his crazy corner of the road.
Right. And, you know,
I confess... I could listen to this all day long. This is hilarious.
Crazy, but what are they doing? I want to know what people are actually going to do. My life is ruined. Does anybody understand how ruined my life is? I'm sick of it. I don't want to listen to people tell me that I'm a conspiracy theorist. They don't know what it's like to be me. My life is ruined, Alex.
What's funny is in the middle, not a single tear falls down her face.
Right.
Let's just put this in perspective for a second.
Yeah.
She's shrieking and screaming like that because she can't go on Facebook anymore.
Right.
I mean, just wait. Right. Don't just say write to me, Reggie. I mean, think about that. Think about that.
Yeah.
I mean, what would get you wrought like that? Maybe getting your power turned off, or your car repoed, or, you know, the death of a loved one, God forbid.
Right.
But this twit can't get on Facebook, and her life is ruined, Alex, ruined!
Wait a minute. Well, most people who get banned don't go on a tirade or a tangent.
Most people who get banned understand why they got banned. But of course, you've only got the audio. I've got the video. So it's left to me to explain that she's on camera. Get this. Now, this is a privileged white woman.
Right.
She's on camera wearing a shirt that says Free Loomer.
Like, was she in prison?
Right. You know, Free Mumia, Free Leonard Peltier, Free Loomer.
What is she in? That's for people who are in prison. Not banned.
But here's the funny part. Actually, this is the not funny part. Last I checked, her hysterics had netted her $62,000.
So she's getting wealthy out of this. So she's gotten sort of wealthy out of this. You know, making money. You know.
Yeah.
She's making money out of this. But you don't hear Minister Lewis. I mean, he was banned, but you don't hear him ranting and raving about it, do you? You don't even hear Alex Jones ranting and raving about it. Not hysterically and psychotically, like a lunatic, like somebody whose head's about to explode. If they face turn Super Beats red, Bob, you know what I mean? I mean, but if that happened to us, do you think we'd be going insane over this? Psychotically insane over this?
You know, No. But then again, I haven't monetized Facebook, and I haven't monetized YouTube, and I haven't monetized Twitter, and I haven't monetized all those other social media platforms. Yeah. You know, we're just running an humble little radio program that talks about raising another $156.
Right.
You know, to finish the evening. I'm not, Laura Loomer has dreams of Gulfstream 5s and shit like that. I don't.
Well, Gulfstream 5, right. That's not like Learjets. Yeah, I mean, that's not like Learjets.
Yeah, that's a Jerry Falwell jet, okay?
Yeah, but you know how much those things cost exactly? You got to be like, you know, John Travolta with
millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah. You think he'll be able to own one of them? I don't think so. Do you, Bob? I don't think so.
That doesn't stop her from wanting one. Or maybe she just wants an Olympic-sized kidney-shaped swimming pool and a pool boy to rub her down with baby oil and iodine. It's hard to say what human wants are all about.
Right. It's like, you know, it'd be like Alex Jones and the rest of them wanting Learjets, too.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure Alex Jones either wants one or has one.
Right. But like you said, he doesn't care about anybody else but himself. Right? He doesn't care about anybody else but himself. But they should ban some more people who are on Facebook.
If you're going to apply the actual terms of service and the community standards of, say, the sewer that goes by the name of Twitter, the first person you'd ban would be Donald Trump.
Right, but nobody wants to do that.
No, it's not that nobody wants to do that. It's that Jack Dorsey doesn't want to do that because Donald Trump is a life support system for that platform because it can't make any goddamn money.
Right.
But people come to it to see his idiocy on display.
Right. Well, anybody else that should be banned?
That's not my job.
I don't even hear Rush Limbaugh talking about this.
Rush Limbaugh's not on Twitter.
No, that's true. But, you know, people who should stay off Twitter, who shouldn't have been on there in the first place. I mean, you know, like you said, there's such things as free speech, but there's a big, ginormous, vast, humongous difference between free speech and hate speech. One is protected, the other one's not. Right, Bob? And you got these.
Well, no, hate speech is protected too in this country.
Unfortunately, but that can get somebody killed. You know what I mean? But do you know how many people would take that seriously? You know, going after people, you know, threatening people is illegal. You know, and but you got people who will do it anyway, whether it's legal or not. You know, like I said before, people might, they'll probably get killed because of this or hurt, you know, if we don't put a stop to it, Bob. You know.
Well, I don't know. I don't know how we do that, but I get the point.
I mean, you know, yeah. I mean, you know, people who spread fear, hate, well, hell, evil, you know, shouldn't be encouraged or tolerated. You know, it starts from the top all the way down to the bottom. You know, as you would call, you got these Trumpanzees with their MAGA hats on, going to one of Trump's quote-unquote rallies, being encouraged by him, you know, to do all these things against normal, law-abiding citizens, you know, like such as ourselves. You know, Bob? You know, and nobody wants to do anything about that. You know, short of the law, and, you know, even across the Internet, nobody wants to do anything about that. Because, you know, when does it end? It probably will never end. Right, Bob?
No. I'm not going to say it's never going to end, Reggie.
When will all of this end exactly, Bob?
I can't tell you that it will. I can't tell you that it will, Reggie. But I can tell you what the only hope is.
What's our only hope, Bob?
Okay, you're in Georgia, right?
Right, Decatur, Georgia, to be exact. But yes, of course.
Okay,
yes, you're right.
So you're in Georgia.
Georgia. Yes.
Then, starting this instant, go out and find somebody who wants to organize against your incumbent Republican senator. When a Democratic candidate comes up against, I think it's Sonny Perdue, you work your ass off, Reggie. Work your ass off. Go knock on doors. Get people active. Explain to them that the only way we're going to ever fix this country that is so badly broken is if we get rid of enough Republicans in the Senate to not just take it over, but to take it over with a supermajority. That's the goal.
We also had to get rid of those that are still in Congress.
What do you think the Senate is, Reggie? I mean, I'm not being a dick here, but Sonny Perdue is in the United States Senate.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
You work in Georgia to get rid of Sonny Perdue. Let people work their asses off in Texas to get rid of John Cornyn. People in Kentucky work their asses off to get rid of Mitch McConnell. People in Tennessee work their asses off to elect a Democrat to replace Lamar Alexander.
Right.
Okay? People work their asses off to get the hell rid of Cindy Hyde Smith in Mississippi.
Right.
I mean, there's a list of 20 Republican senators up for election, re-election in 2020. If everybody busts their ass and gets rid of them and replaces them with Democrats,
right,
then you've got a fighting chance.
Right. That's true. That is so very true. That is so very true, Bob. That is so very true. Well, who is Cindy Hyde Smith anyway, Bob, if I may ask?
Who?
Cindy Hyde Smith.
Who is she?
Yeah, who is she?
She's a senator from the state of Florida. This is the one who dressed up in Confederate garb. This is the one who said she'd like to be on the front row at a lynching.
Oh. She should have been gone right then and there. She should have been gone right then and there. Yeah, she should have been gone right then and there. I'm sure she was protested against after that came out.
Sure, she was.
But the reason
you have to organize your ass off is because you're going to have to organize not just around the other voters on the other side. You got to organize against the various voter suppression scams that these Confederate states have implemented, and other states as well. Texas has a proposed law right now, Reggie, that will make it illegal to take an elderly person to the polls to vote.
Oh, man.
That will make it illegal to get a van and carry voters to the polls. It illegal to take a disabled person to the polls to vote. Because the Republicans are scared out of their wits. And they know that the only way they hold power is by keeping people from voting.
Right.
And see, you in Georgia came very close to getting yourself a Democrat for a governor this last election. Just like in Texas, they came closer than the Republicans were even willing to admit to replacing Ted Cruz.
Right.
There is things are changing. Things are turning.
Right.
But we can't, if you lose really close, it still goes in the L column. And so Stacey Abrams still isn't your governor.
No, she isn't. She was cheated out of that.
David Perdue. David Perdue in Georgia. Sonny Perdue is agriculture.
Right. Well.
But anyway, the name doesn't matter. Whoever is running as a Republican for Senate,
right?
You organize against them.
Right. You organize against them. That's true. And then, like you said, we'll have a fighting chance. Turning this country around.
If we've got a Democrat House, a Democrat Senate with a 60-vote majority, a 60-vote supermajority,
right,
and we get rid of Donald Trump, the sky's the limit for what we can accomplish.
Right, but we still have to clean up after him, so to speak.
Oh yeah.
After he's gone.
Yeah, sure. But Reggie, I've detailed on this program probably well before you started listening. But the times in this country when great changes were effected are usually windows that are no more than 2 or 3 years wide.
Right. Right. Two or three years.
And so
wide.
A government that wants to make things better and is willing to bust its ass to do it can do it.
Right. Like you said, it takes hard work, blood, sweat, tears, and commitment, and drive.
All of that, Reggie. All of that.
It does take all of that.
Listen, my friend, you have yourself a good evening, and we will talk soon, okay? Enjoy the warm weather, man. You got a couple more hours of it, I think. Or at least an hour or so of it. Get out there and enjoy it.
Right. Well, what about you, Bob? I hope you can do the same.
Well, no, I'll be in here till after dark, but the sun will shine again, and I'm going to go out and play in it.
Oh, good. Good.
And one of these days it won't rain on the weekend, and I will barbecue.
Oh, that's good, man.
All right, you take care, Reggie.
Yeah, you do too, Bob.
Later, man.
Don't work too hard now, Bob.
Oh, well, hard as I gotta. Hardly working. Right. Later. Bye now.
Right,
that's our buddy Reggie calling from Decatur. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. How are you?
I'm here.
I liked a phrase kind of popped out from that activist that you were quoting earlier. Isolated, anxious, and depressed. Well, that's me, Bob. I'm all of those things, plus much, much more.
I don't know many activists who aren't.
Yeah, well, it's a lonely life.
Well, not to be disagreeable, Scott. It's not that it's so lonely or anything. There's lots of people around you when you're an activist because there's usually other activists. But the thing is, you don't get to turn it off at the end of the day. The people who are welding that Mountain Valley Pipeline, they say quitting time, they, you know, shut down the welders and everything, and they go home. Maybe they stop and get a six-pack of beer, and job's over. And God knows it's the same thing if you're an executive or whatever. It's over at the end of the day, and you live this constantly bifurcated life where there's the you think you are, and there's the you that does all the evil shit you have to do in order to be the you think you are, and they never meet. But activists have only one them, and it's the them they are when they go to bed, and the them they are when they get up, and the them they are at lunch and dinner and when they go to the John. And it's never away from you, and it will make you fucking crazy.
Well, what, and I didn't express it maybe as well as I should have, but what I'm talking about an activist having a lonely life, I'm thinking in terms of people in places where activism is the exception as opposed to the rule. And you feel like you're the only person who knows that there's something terribly, terribly wrong. And it seems insurmountable that anything can be done to switch it around to a more workable, positive, appropriate state, you know? So that's what I was meaning in terms of lonely. It's an individual battle, but luckily we can encounter others who are on the same wavelength. And like I remember a saying from the 60s, if I take my index finger and extend it and poke you two or three times in the chest, that's not going to cause you any, you may not even notice that it's happening. But when you get several index fingers and a thumb and you ball them up into a fist, not literally, but in terms of having a message that has some impact, you can start to make a difference. Because it's like the story of the mule. First, you've got to get their attention. And I think that's what you were describing to Jesse or Reggie, in terms of the Republicans are scared, even though they're not fessing up to it. They know that there's something in the wind. They know that there are people who are, as Howard Beale used to say, mad as hell and don't want to take it anymore. So there's some hope to be had if you're looking in the right place and you believe that something can at long last be done. And you're right about the window. It's not that window's open just a little crack for a limited time, and you've got to strike
and,
well.
And the examples of that, Scott, are crystal clear. The only reason we have land-grant universities in the United States,
mm-hmm.
and you know what those are?
Oh, yes.
The only reason we have them is that for a little bit of time, the South wasn't in the Congress. Because land-grant universities had been an idea going back almost to the beginning of the country. And mm-hmm. every time it was brought up, the southern states said, well, we can't be having that. That ain't no limited government. And then everybody'd want to go to college, and who's going to chop the cotton then? And it worked. But for a couple of years, the South was out of the Congress, and all kinds of shit got done.
Well, there's an idea that's come again.
But the same thing happens with the arrival of FDR. You get a 2 or 3 year window. And that's when things get done. There was a brief window with JFK.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the Republicans, what's been done since Reagan, they damned well know it.
Well, and that raises an interesting point. The limited time frame and the only marginally opened window. The time to begin to get engaged is not around election time. The time to begin to get engaged is now, where you're talking these things up among friends and relatives and associates who are of a like mind. You know, because this is what troubles me about the election cycles that we have in this country. The 6 months preceding it builds up month by month by month until finally it's a big frenzy, and that's all that most people are talking about. Well, that'll only carry you so far. If you weren't together and organized and, you know, fired up and ready to go the day after the last election, for all practical purposes, you're diminishing the possibility of impact. Wouldn't you think? I mean, come on.
Sure. And, so, and you know, there's a lot of people on our side of the debate who think that that what's called ranked choice voting would be a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, what you can kind of engage in your own little personal version of that. You can list all the Democratic presidential candidates and then list them by preference from number one all the way to number 21.
Not enough ink in my printer, Bob, to list all of the Democrats who have announced.
I know, but work with me here.
All right, I will.
Because as you sit there and you rank your choices, what you're doing in a way is you're saying, you're also comparing what you know about their policy positions and what you think about their effectiveness and their electability. And when you get down to number 22, you're still saying, but I'd rather have this person than Donald fucking Trump.
Yeah, ultimately, it should come down to that if you're thinking right.
I mean, if I can say that the couple of candidates that I really, really don't like, I would still vote for as the nominee instead of Donald Trump, then it should be easy for just about anybody. Whereas if you on the one hand think, well, you know, I'd like to have ranked choice voting, and then you put down one name and go, yeah, but I couldn't vote for any more of those, then you really don't want ranked choice voting, do you?
Well, and we have that out here in the primary. If I'm not mistaken, we've got it out here in the primary system. The top two vote getters, if I'm not mistaken, are the ones that go up against each other in the general.
The jungle primary, yeah.
Which is why
it's not quite the same as ranked choice, but yeah, similar.
Okay, but, and, you know, like this last time around, it was one of the big races where there were two Democrats going up in the general because they were the top two vote getters. Now, how does the ranked choice compare to that? Because maybe I heard the term and didn't really know exactly what it was.
Well, it's a matter of comparing votes. You know, who gets the most number one votes? But you know, if your number one doesn't, then it goes to number two, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that, you know, and anything that we can do that enhances our chances, because like I was going to say, in this narrow time frame and the marginally opened window, you've really got to strike while the iron is hot. Whether you're making horseshoes or swords or whatever, and you've got to have your mindset engaged in such a way that, first of all, you can see the opportunity on the horizon as it's beginning to present itself, but then also be organized and ready and grouped up, so to speak, to take full advantage of it. Because you know the other side is taking full advantage of whatever their advantages are or their strong points. And, you know, nothing is more terrifying than the notion of a circular firing squad this time around, where we get real pissy about it and our candidate didn't become the nominee, so I'm going to go out back and eat grass, like we saw happen in 2016. It just troubles me.
I think there's actually a song about that. Nobody likes me. Everybody hates me. I'm going to eat some worms. Isn't that
it? There you go. Yeah, that rings a bell. Now, let me ask you about this pipeline, not to jump topics all of a sudden.
I can do that.
What is the width of that natural gas pipeline out
there? It is 42 inches in diameter, and it will run under high pressure.
Well, hell, that's narrower than Trump's ass, 42 inches.
Really? You made me jump through those hoops to get there.
Oh, come on. Come on.
Yeah.
But it just is, you've got to laugh to keep from crying sometimes. I mean, you just do. And, you know, as noxious as he is, there is one good thing about Trump being exactly where he is and how he is. Those who find that he's a detestable chunk of scum, it just strengthens their reserve, or not their reserve, their resolve to vote that fucker the fuck out.
Did you happen to see the news today that for the first time in his miserable tenure in office, I guess he's crossed the 50% approval line?
Now, say that again. He's got 50% approval?
Yep.
Who did they ask, first of all?
Didn't ask me.
Well, no, they didn't ask
me. No landline here, so I ain't getting asked nothing.
Is this like of potential voters, people who think they're going to vote, or?
Well, I don't think it's 56% of the people who pick up cocktail weenies with toenail clippings.
Well, no,
because that would be north of 80.
They're in the bag already.
In more ways than one.
I'd be interested to know which poll that was. Was it one of these stupid online polls?
It wasn't SurveyMonkey or anything like that, I don't think. I just saw it and went and kept moving. It was that or going to buy tequila.
Well, you piqued my interest. On what basis could any rational human being step up and with a strong, steady voice?
You lose. You use the word rational.
What? Who were they asking, and on what basis did they make that?
Well, I mean, told you I didn't. I saw it and went and kept moving. I didn't absorb the details.
Well, if you find out, let me know, because I'm taking them off my holiday card list.
Well,
those
people don't deserve to hear from me. This isn't like talk radio was back, you know, generations ago. Let's ask the internet.
All right,
Trump. Approval.
I'm glad you brought it up, because that's worth talking about, I think.
50%. There. There it is. Mm-hmm. You've made me do it. Now, you're off the Christmas list.
No. It wasn't that website that rhymes with light and fart.
No.
Okay.
Via Agence France-Presse. Trump's approval hits highest rating ever in Gallup poll. Oh, I'm sorry. Trump's job approval rating crept up 1 point to 46% for the two-week period ending April 30th, a substantial rise from the 39% approval he recorded in early March.
Yeah, I think I had heard that not long ago.
Disapproval remains at 50%, down from 57% on March 10th. So with the release of the Mueller report, he's actually gone up in the polls. Now, just imagine what happens if we initiate impeachment proceedings.
I'm contemplating moving, I think it's to Colorado. I believe I saw a snippet of information on one of the news sites. I believe it's Colorado that's talking about making legal the use of hallucinogenic mushrooms. Maybe this is what I need to do, is see that law passed, go to wherever that is, and make a pizza with some of them mushrooms on it. We're through the fucking looking glass, Brother Bob. I mean, what the hell's going on? I expect Ed McMahon and Dick Clark to jump out from behind something and tell me I'm on TV's Bloopers and Practical Jokes. I'm pretty good at understanding stuff and having a grasp on things, but we're in uncharted territory here. I don't know how to even react to some of the bullshit that's being passed off as today's reality. I'm truly at a loss, and I'm not just being dramatic.
Well, I understand that, but I mean, I don't. Granted, it's one poll.
Yeah.
But a 9-point jump in the space of the Mueller report.
Well, maybe they were asking people who their comprehension skills are not all that up to snuff, and they catch about every third word.
Well, I mean, they were asking the same people they always ask who answer landline phones.
Well, they should have called me, because when I dropped my landline several years ago, I ported my landline number to the iPhone, and you can do that. And I'm pretty sure it's a national thing where if you've had a landline with a number, you can have that be your cell phone number. And I don't think there's any designation in the database. In other words, if you knew my number, which you probably may already, you could Google it and find out that it's a AT&T landline based in whatever central switching office serving whatever place.
Yeah, that's more work than I'm willing to do, Scott.
Okay, well, wait a minute. I don't know. But anyway, what I'm saying is the databases of numbers that these polling companies use, they make very special, they take very special care to make sure they're only calling numbers associated with landlines. But in the case of a number that's ported from previous landline service, it doesn't show up as being on a cell phone, is what I'm trying to say.
Right, I get that.
So okay. By rights, they ought to be calling me. I used to get called a lot about all kinds of stuff. And yeah. I wish more people would. You know, and another thing I wish, Bob, is that you were here with me today, the last couple of days.
Yeah.
And do you know why?
Why?
Well, we're having the time of year that I love about San Diego weather. We have what you call your May gray, where the days are kind of cool and overcast more often than not. And that's usually followed by June gloom, where the skies are a little overcast many days of the month, and the temperatures are cool. And then come July, they throw a switch, and summer happens until late November, okay? But it's a perfect time for me, because in 2 weeks, I've got my 2-year inspection on my housing situation. In other words, they're sending a guy in 2 weeks to give the place the once-over to make sure that it meets all of their requirements. And not being a very studious or committed housekeeper, I tend to let things go because it's just me and the cat, you know, and we're used to one another's habits.
And the things that you leave stacked up, the cat likes to climb around on. It's
my, yeah. Oh,
it's
yeah.
Symbiotic that way.
Yeah. She's I think in a previous life, she was Sir Edmund Hillary. And why does she climb these things? Because they're there. But anyway, the past few days I've been pitching and sorting, and I've got in mind some rearranging to do in terms of the furniture. And I've got a rug that I'm going to put down that I've had since I moved here and just never got around to putting it down, you know? And if you were here, you could watch me do it, or you could carry something out back and put it in the dumpster.
Or help unroll the rug. Absolutely. You never know when Indeed. Cleopatra is going to be in one of those.
Yes.
A little the worse for wear these days, but nonetheless, it would be pretty exciting.
Or one of the Three Stooges. Didn't they have a bit where one of them, Chimp or Curly or one of them?
Sure they did, and they stole it from Cleopatra.
Oh, all right. All right. Well, anyway. Is that all I got today? I don't know. Oh, now, this company that's in charge of this pipeline,
yes,
I know in state and federal contracts, when they're hooking up with a contractor to do something, the work goes to the lowest bidder. Are we in one of those situations with a private company?
Oh, it's strictly private. So, I mean, no, they were kind of they were at their liberty to hire who they chose. I mean, they're certainly doing it mostly non-union, I think.
Well, that would be
maybe I'm wrong.
But what I'm getting at, you mentioned the welding issues. One guy's weld may be perfect, but the guy welding the next section.
Oh, and I can vouch for what James said, because it was three summers ago now, maybe. Three summers ago. No, two. Sorry, confusing.
You're making me dizzy. Stuff.
I know. I went up to D.C. For the National Academy of Science meeting about the review of the mountaintop removal health data, you know, which subsequently got quashed and suppressed by the Trump regime. So that's how I knew it was 2 years ago. And because we were traveling on the cheap, I stayed at a Red Roof Inn out in Manassas, Virginia.
Oh, yeah. Some of my people used to live in Manassas.
I know. I've heard about them. There was an auntie who had a thing for wrestling, wasn't there?
Those were the nearby aunties. This was Big Grandma.
Oh, okay.
This was my paternal grandmother's mother, who didn't speak English. I think the only word she knew was no.
What did she speak?
Slovak.
Oh, okay.
And when we were little kids, she was still around. She lived until, I think, 1961 or two, somewhere in there. And my grandmother's sister, Aunt Anne, would bring Big Grandma up from the country to stay with our grandma for a day or two. And this was a big deal to see Big Grandma. And she's just typical Eastern European woman, you know, white hair, lined, wrinkled old face, wearing her kerchief, speaking maybe a word or two of English. And we thought she was talking Martian or something, because we had never encountered a native speaker of Slovak or Slovakian. Which would it be?
I'm not sure.
Well, whatever. But she was something else. I mean, you think back to the old folks that you were really too young to ask them anything meaningful or to get a sense of their history. Because you got to figure, she and my grandmother, and I think another sibling of hers, came over.
Well, but anyway, anyway. Because we're going to
wait a minute.
We're going to lose this thread in a second.
All right.
Anyway, I was running on the cheap, so.
I
wound up at a.
at Red Roof in Manassas.
The Red Roof in Manassas, Virginia. And it was a great place. I mean, I as soon as I got there, I called the boss and I said, "Honey, if you pick up the paper and it says, you know, murder in Manassas, I may not be coming home because this place is kind of sketchy."
Oh.
And
I think I know that place now that you mentioned it.
So I was next door neighbors with a welder.
Oh.
From Houma, Louisiana.
Oh dear.
And he had him big old pick 'em up truck with a big old welding rig on it. Yeah, I'm working on pipeline. And he had a folding lawn chair that he would set up outside the door of his motel room where he'd been living for months, and a cooler with beer in it. And the minute I got there, he proceeded to regale me with lots of stories about goddamn unions and them fucking gingers. Only we understand that wasn't the word he was using.
Yes, I think, see, when you say ginger, most people would think of Prince Harry. That's not who.
No, there's another word that has all the same letters that I despise.
Yeah, okay.
And went on at length until I sort of went in the door and barricaded. Oh, I hear my mother calling. That sort of thing. But I thought of him when James wrote earlier. Because, yeah, that's the guy That's one of the guys to whom we are entrusting the safety of a high-pressure natural gas pipeline.
You know, his mind obviously is not on his work. He's talking about being economically disadvantaged and pissed off that somebody's got something that he ain't. And we know who those somebodies are.
The goddamn union. Yeah. And I told that inspector he could fuck right off. I knew what the hell I was doing. He could just keep going. And you know what? He kept going. Oh, good. I bet you take your beer to work with you, don't you?
You remember his name?
Oh, no.
Was he a Cajun-type fella?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure his name ended in E-A-U-X.
Yeah.
Ribido, Thibodeau, Fibido, Libido, Bobido.
His experience of unions, did he go into any detail what his issue was with unions?
Well, they just take your money and you don't get nothing for it, and then when they fire you for being drunk on the job, they won't even stand up for you and defend you.
Well, you'll find that in a lot of companies that are not.
Well, you know, I mean, I figured he probably had a small arsenal in his rooms, and you know, the walls weren't particularly thick, Scott, so I didn't want to press the issue.
I stayed at a red roof.
Hell, you didn't even get carpet. It was a hard linoleum floor.
See, I think back.
And even in high July, that son of a bitch was cold when you got up in the morning.
Yeah. I think back, Bob, to the late 70s and into the 80s when I was working for Ma Bell in the D.C. area, and then I transferred out to Kansas City. These were union shops, and I gladly paid my dues. And I went to the union meetings every month or every other week, you know, over in D.C. at the local, you know, and got involved. And, you know, because I knew that in the grand scheme of things, what I was paying in my union dues, taken out of each check, that it was reflected in, the benefits were reflected in, A, my working conditions, and in my benefits, and in my annual wage, and I'd worked at places before that were non-union. Up until that point, I think that was the best money I ever made until a few years later in Kansas City when I got back into radio and was working for the only union shop in radio that I'd ever worked in. And this was 88, 89, 90, okay, working part-time on Sundays or fill-ins if a full-timer was away, making $19 an hour back then to sit on my white butt and play records and entertain whoever was out there listening. There was no heavy lifting or welding involved, but you almost couldn't get your head around it. Now, why anybody would take issue with good working conditions, good benefits, a good annual wage, those are quality of life things. And I remember in this country when unions were strong in this country, when the middle class was brought to us by union shops. And it also reflected...
Right, because, I mean, it's worth noting that... America never had a burgeoning middle class without unions, okay? It just didn't.
Well, exactly.
I mean, just because I'm in West Virginia. And by the way, if you wanted to just see some fascinating stuff, the online archive of old black and white photographs in this state is amazing. And, you know, it's coal company houses stacked right on top of each other. They're basically built out of spit and toilet paper, mud streets.
Ramshackle.
Oh, the very definition.
Yeah.
And so it's not like there was prosperity all over the place. There was a lot of growth, But the only people who had prosperity and flower boxes and shit like that were the bosses.
Mm-hmm.
And that extends, you know, that extends up into the up into the 20th century. There are two little communities, and they named them backwards, by the way. On down US 60, down below the mountain. One's called Charlton Heights, and you can see the falls of the Great Kanawha River from it. The other one is called Falls View, and you can't view the falls from Falls View. They registered them backwards. But that whole community was built for middle management and management of the Union Carbide plant on down the river. The one that
Isn't that where your dad worked?
My dad did work there, but yeah. It's also the plant that necessitated the building of the Hawk's Nest Tunnel that killed probably more than 1,000 African-American men trying to dig through solid sandstone, and that's where we learned about silicosis occupational pneumoconiosis, because it was an industrial disaster. And they built a golf course for the management on up the mountain, and my dad caddied there when he was a little boy for, mm-hmm. you know, nickels, for hauling, get a nickel at the end of a round for hauling some boss's clubs. So one of the best chroniclers of all this is Joe Bagent, who in Rainbow Pie talks about how his hillbilly family and his hillbilly daddy, the only time he ever had anything like a decent existence was when he finally got a union job. And that's a story that's repeated time after time after time all over the country.
You know who else has been who was a long chronicler of those days?
Studs Terkel.
Working is the name of the book where he interviewed just every type of worker that you can imagine. And it's inspiring. You know, in all this talk about union that I've been doing and you've been doing, I've had to fight the urge to break into song from you remember the commercials in the 70s from the International Ladies Garment Workers Union?
I still know the song.
Look for the union label when you are buying a coat, dress, or blouse. Remember somewhere, and I forget the full lyric, but, you know, we work hard, but who's complaining? Because the ILG is paying our way.
Yeah, but the seeds of labor's demise were planted in the soil of its greatest triumphs. Because no sooner had they succeeded in the Northeast and the Midwest than the bosses took the work south, where they knew that there was a captive workforce and governments that were absolutely determined never to let unions take hold.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the best films that I ever saw, a documentary about one segment of union work in this country, was on HBO in like 2008, 2009, called Schmata, S-C-H-M-A-T-T-A, Rags to Riches to Rags. And I'm telling you, it's all about the garment workers in New York, Manhattan. And there was a time, up until recent history, where the garment workers in Manhattan, in New York, it was one of the biggest industries in that region. And along about the mid-70s, they started giving away, not they, the union, but they, the government, started sending that work south or offshore. And at one time, garments in this country, a high percentage, something like 90-some percent of clothing and textiles and things that one would wear or use were made at a union shop. And you can look, they show a chart. Every 5 years or so, it would dwindle down a little, and then dwindle down a little, and then dwindle down a little. And when this documentary came out in like 2008 or 2009, it was something like 5% of clothing and textiles and things of that sort made by union workers in that industry. Only 5% of these items in America was made by union labor. And it's heartbreaking because we did it to ourselves. We mindlessly elected people who did not have our best interests at heart. And I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but it makes me mad. And there's a window that we didn't even see get open and didn't even pay strong enough attention to these horrible degradations as they were occurring. And I don't know what accounts for that, really. I mean, what were we all doing in the 70s and into the 80s? Had we napped and decided not to pay as close attention?
No, we bought great big quart bottles of the Republican snake oil. One of the big talking points back then was, well, you know, unions had their place back in the day, but we've learned so much now that we don't really need them no more. I can't tell you how many times I heard that growing up in Alabama.
Well, that's not straight thinking, I don't think. I know for a fact it's not straight thinking.
Oh, I didn't say it was, but it damned well was the reality. And from, you know, in your guts, you know, he's nuts.
Goldwater.
Yeah, from Goldwater. Well, not even from. The Taft-Hartley Act, and my buddy Rick Smith is much better on this than I am. But, you know, once upon a time, we had the National Labor Relations Act. And then those godforsaken Tafts from Ohio. There's a statute to this Taft in question in a park just down from Capitol Hill. And I remember the first time I was ever there, me and Boss Man Wayne were there, and I went over and spit on that statue.
Good for you.
Because that Republican son of a bitch was the man who took the teeth out of the National Labor Relations Act.
Now, are we talking Robert Taft?
Yes.
Who was like the grandson of William Howard?
Yes.
Okay.
Total dirtbag.
Yeah.
Corrupt as the day is long and a piece of shit. And the only thing the Taft-Hartley Act did was remove the rights of unions to strenuously withhold their labor.
Mm-hmm.
Eisenhower despised unions. Goldwater despised unions. Nixon despised unions. He kept despising unions. Ford despised unions. And, of course, Reagan, even though he had been a union president, despised unions. And they had aiders and abettors. Rush Limbaugh will never tell you on air, or any of these other right-wing scumbags who inveigh against labor and people having a middle-class living. But those sons of bitches are all union members. And they go hammer and tongs against the right of people to advocate for their own better wages. And that was a linchpin to the rise of the middle class and to its demise.
And what do we have today after all that erosion in this country today and in the world besides? What do we have? We have what they're calling laughingly the gig economy. Now,
today? A bunch of damned Uber drivers announced a strike.
Yeah.
And see, the fun thing is there, you know, and they got no protection, so they'll just be shit canned.
Yeah, this is in conjunction with Uber or Lyft or maybe both of them going public, the IPO. Isn't that what that's connected to?
I think it is. I think you're right.
Yeah. Now, when you're a good old country boy, you know what it is to go out and gig a frog, don't you?
I have been gigging.
Okay. Well, when I hear the term gig economy, I don't think in terms of you know, a slang word for a job. I think, worker, you're getting yourself gigged.
Yeah, no, you're sitting there impaled on a little tiny trident and being held up and looked at.
Yeah.
And they're going to lop your legs off and roll them in flour and fucking fry them. Yeah. Goody. Hey, Grandpa, what's for supper? Worker.
And it tastes like chicken. What did the first person who ever tasted chicken say it tasted a lot like?
It probably frog.
Well, maybe. I don't know. And I've had frog's legs before.
By the way, no. You were in radio, so you know what a kicker is, right?
Yeah.
I got a kicker for us.
Uh-oh.
Because every now and then we got to have a fun story. Well, at least an interesting story. Yeah, this is human. This is Florida woman. A woman was apprehended in Florida along with her boyfriend. And when the police asked her if she had anything illegal on her, I swear, hand to God, this is what the news report said. She reached into her yoga pants.
Oh, no.
And withdrew a 1-foot-long alligator. Now, if you don't follow up with the necessary line, you're gonna destroy all my faith in you as a lover of great comedy.
Well, another line comes to mind, but it's not humorous, really, in any overt way. The line that immediately came to mind was Paul Harvey's great line. This, he would usually have one of these stories at the end of his noonday broadcast, and he'd pause and say, "Paul Harvey,
good day.
Yeah.
No. Then, are you happy to see me? Is that an alligator in your pants, or are you happy to see me?"
That's
what the judges were looking for, Scott.
Yeah, well, that would have been my second choice. My mind went to Paul Harvey.
And when they asked her if she had any more illegal animals, it turned out that she had 41 small turtles in her backpack.
Holy God.
But when Agnes, when Agnes turned me on to this story and made me read it aloud, she said, "What kind of pants, Bob?" I said, "Yoga pants, dear."
Mm.
She said, "Where did she put the 1-foot-long alligator? Because I know what, I'm hip. I know what yoga pants are."
And they're not, I've never worn yoga pants, but I've seen pictures, and I don't believe they're like free flowing.
There's
lots
not a
of
lot
extra
of room for alligator hiding. That's the
yeah.
the judges, as a second answer, would have accepted. I take it you're playing hide the alligator.
Yeah. Oh. I don't. Let me close with a true to life kicker from my own youth.
Involve my alligators.
In a manner of speaking. My late...
That gator will bite you.
My late Uncle Ted, one of my dad's brothers, grew up in Alexandria, as did all the boys. And he, for some reason in the 50s, decided that the weather didn't suit his clothes, and he moved to Miami. And he was a mechanic for Eastern Airlines, based in Miami. And they... Back in those days, employees and their families could get free or discounted airfare if there was room on the plane. and they would come up once or twice a year, Uncle Ted, Aunt Lois, and the kids. And they would stay at, next door at grandmother's house. And one year he came up and he said, boy, do I have a treat for you, Scott. And I said, well, what is that, Uncle Ted? He said, I brought you something from the Sunshine State. And I said, what'd you bring me? What'd you bring me? I was like maybe 7, 8 years old. And he pulled out a grocery bag, a brown paper grocery bag. And out of it, he pulls out a, you know, those styrofoam containers that are covered in plastic with a label that you get cuts of meat. He pulled one of those out of this grocery sack. And it looked for all the world like ham. But it couldn't have been ham because on the label printed in like the grocery store font was alligator steak.
Ah.
So I said, well, I've never had alligator steak. And he says, well, it's a good thing I brought it then. So we're in the kitchen. He proceeds to pull out the skillet and fry up the alligator steak and serve it on a plate. And he cuts out half for him and half for me. He says, taste it. Tell me what you think. So I cut off a piece and got a big old forkful. And I said, Ted, this tastes like ham. He says, you know, a lot of people say that when they first try alligator steak. And he had me going for years. Apparently, he knew a guy down at the Safeway in Alexandria.
That packaged.
Would print out a special label for that slice of ham that read, not ham, but alligator steak. And Ted had me going for years. I even bragged to friends about it, you know, because they normally come up in the summer. And then, you know, what did you do? You know, the first day back in school, the teacher would say, you know, write a little essay about what you did this past summer. And I at least once recounted the story of my uncle from Florida bringing me alligator steak. And then the other kids would say, well, wait a minute, isn't alligator endangered? They can't serve alligator for food. And I'd say, well, I don't know about all that, but I know what he brought me, and I should have saved the packaging to show him the label, and then they, too, would be believers. God. So, alligator steak. Good old Uncle Ted. Man, I miss him.
Now that you can, when you get down to the Redneck Riviera, deep-fried gator bites is right there on the menu.
Is that real gator, though?
Oh, yes.
Oh, mercy.
Tastes like chicken. That's where I thought we were going. Tastes like chicken. Hey, Scott, I got to get out of here, brother.
Well, I know you do. So go nudge Agnes and put on a pathetic smile and say, honey, fix me up a plate of alligator steak, and we'll eat it in honor of Scott's Uncle Ted, who's gone off to that big meat market in the sky.
Hot diggity, I will. Scott, be good, man.
All right, take care.
Later. Our buddy Scott calling from San Diego. Alligator steak. A note on pipelines, courtesy of Mike in Cascadia. My town, Bellingham, had the Olympic pipe disaster in 1999. The pipe runs from the refineries at Cherry Point through Bellingham and down to Seattle. In early summer 1999, the pipe ruptured in idyllic Whatcom Falls Park in the middle of Bellingham. Nearly a quarter, or over a quarter million gallons of gasoline ran into Whatcom Creek. A 17-year-old high school boy fishing on the creek succumbed to the fumes and drowned. 2 8-year-old boys were in the park near the creek and lighting illegal fireworks. Their lighter ended up igniting that million gallons of gasoline. The explosion sent smoke 30,000 feet into the air. The 2 8-year-olds were standing in ankle-deep water when the explosion happened. With their clothes incinerated, they ran naked up to one boy's house where they met a big brother. The big brother later told the media his little brother said, "Don't tell Mom." Both 8-year-olds were helicoptered to Seattle, where they died within hours. If the boys had not ignited the creek when they did, the gas would have run west under I-5 through downtown Bellingham and into the bay. So those 2 8-year-olds likely saved many lives. The issue was the pipeline company, Equilon, a joint venture of Shell and Texaco. They had skimped on pipeline inspections. Their pig, the automated machine that runs through the pipe for inspections, had picked up a weak spot in the pipe in the park. However, the company failed to act on the weakness. A pressure surge occurred in the pipe, and that caused the weak point to fail. Thus, over 250,000 gallons of gas in Whatcom Creek, 3 dead boys, a ruined Salmon Creek, and a traumatized city. To this day, Olympic Pipeline runs right through Bellingham, through neighborhoods, next to schools, and under creeks. Yep, says Mike in Cascadia. It's not if, but when. Not if, but when. And so we come to the end of the program. We finished with $156 left to raise, so we'll just put that on tomorrow. Thank you so very kindly to Randy and PA for the When Billionaires Choose, You Lose challenge. Thank you to Robert in Australia for answering it, and thank you to Charlene in Rhode Island for answering it. I cannot thank you enough. It is truly how this program continues to survive. Thanks to all our subscribers. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this little program, however you so do. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky earlier in the evening, and thanks to Steve from Georgistan in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.